Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger. Boys, we're back. It's been a week, I believe.
It's been a million years if it's been a day.
Not sure what that meant. Joe, your thoughts on being back?
Summer season's over. Yeah. Regular season's starting, well, after the preseason, but yeah.
Yes. So I guess to a little housekeeping. A little housekeeping is in order. First of all, the World Cup of Hockey is officially over. We are the champions. And by we, I mean, of course, Team Canada.
You did it.
I did it.
You did it.
I did it.
All by yourself.
All by myself. And Brad Marchand and Sidney Crosby.
That's right. And
don't forget your boy, Johnny Toews.
He played well.
That was a great pass.
He had a really nice assist. What?
I mean, I didn't want to be that guy that texted you about a player that you're not high on doing well.
No, I mean, okay.
Because we've all talked to that guy that's like, oh, I can't wait to rub it in his face.
This is already off the rails.
I mean, you're constantly criticizing Toews, you know, just because, you know, criticism is constructive sometimes. And then Brad Marchand plays for the Bruins and you're rooting for him. It's like, oh, just wait for the regular season to turn over and you're going to be back at it.
Of course. But the thing I was going to say about Toews, okay, like, we're already so off the rails. It's okay. So, the thing with Toews is I don't hate Jonathan Toews. I don't hate his game. I actually think he's a very good player. But what I fight against is the perception of Jonathan Toews.
The notion that he's, like, the greatest.
That he's, like, the best center in the NHL. Yeah. That he's the best. You know, like, stuff like that. That's what I'm fighting against. He's a great player. He had, like, 30-something goals last year.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... You're not going to hear me say that he's a bad player or anything.
Yeah, this is just us giving you a hard time, but...
It's okay. Hey, I can take it.
You can take it.
All right. So, the World Cup. Canada wins. Any closing thoughts? Let's put a bow on our World Cup coverage. I hope, by the way, that all you listeners have enjoyed our in-depth coverage of the World Cup. It's our first World Cup together.
Our first World Cup as a line.
Yeah, our first World Cup. Closing thoughts on the World Cup.
I felt bad for Halak. He played so well.
He did play well. And then that last goal was a little stoppable.
Not even the last goal. The power play goal, you know, it's like a very late period penalty.
Yeah.
And then Canada, of course, capitalizes because they have to.
Yeah.
And then they're on the power play. They have a chance. And then they give Toews and Marchand too much room. They gave them a lot of room shorthanded.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about this game this was actually probably Canada's worst game of the tournament. They were getting outshot the majority of the game by Team Europe.
It didn't seem like it could... Like, not to say that Canada was awful in game one, but I don't think anyone...
They weren't at their best.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought that it was going to get worse than that, and it did.
It got... I mean, it's funny because Carey Price had to stand on his head.
Yeah, he did.
And that was his best game of the tournament, which for me as a Canadiens fan is very encouraging.
Yes.
Because absolutely. You know, it bodes well for the season.
Just as a hockey fan, it's good to see him playing well.
But I really loved the story of Team Europe. I thought that the way they came together as sort of a thrown together team and with no time to prepare, I thought that was really impressive that they could, you know, forge an identity for themselves and give Canada a serious run for their money. I don't think, I think Canada always had that confidence in that second game, but I'm sure at some point they thought, like, okay, we got to actually fight here.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure there was some paint being torn off the walls in the intermissions.
Babs.
Yeah, but getting back to Team Europe, this firmly reignited number of job offers that Ralph Kruger is going to get.
Oh, yeah, that's the only storyline you heard after. Like, it wasn't Canada winning because everyone knew Canada was going to win. And even for how tight it was, but you know, the only thing you heard afterwards was Ralph Kruger. Where's he going?
All right, so I'll ask you guys this. What's your biggest takeaway from the World Cup of Hockey 2016? If you had to, like, when you're walking away thoughts, like, what are you thinking?
Looking at the tournament as a whole and how, you know, pre-tournament predictions and, you know, during the playoffs, how they're bringing the lineups together. And then moving forward, because 2 years from now it's going to be the Olympics, how teams are going to be put together. Because I think we saw, you know, something from the last Olympics and then this World Cup, we saw teams going for a certain blueprint, usually to beat Canada, you know, US and other teams trying to do that. And it fell flat on its face. It fell hard. Family Guy fell hard on its face.
Your takeaway is this is the death of the blueprint.
It might just be going for, you know, the best players available.
All right. Yeah. Nick, you got a takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. It's that the skill is going to prevail. We saw Team USA go the not skill route.
Yeah, you can't leave your best players at home.
Yeah, you can't. You cannot
to passive aggressively tweet at you afterwards.
Yes.
Look, I think for me, I have a couple takeaways. My first one is just that a best on best tournament always makes for a good fan experience.
It's fun.
I think everyone who's a fan of the game and even casual fans, I think, enjoyed this tournament. And I do agree with you guys. I was actually going to say that I think this tournament is a cautionary tale for, you know, organizers, managers of international teams that, look, don't overthink this. Get your best players together.
Get your best coaches.
Like, I think that when you put talented hockey players together, they sort of figure it out. You know, they sort of, you know, I think talent put together with other talent always is a good equation. That's why I, you know, like, again, like I'm saying, don't overthink it if you're a GM of a team. Just get your best players. Like, honestly, there's no use in overthinking. You saw what happened to Team USA.
Well, I just fear that even though this should have been that wake-up call, and not to beat the dead horse with Team USA too much, because we've done that.
I mean, they were like a story. They were the story of the tournament in some ways.
Yeah, and like that's the thing is they had this terrible experience because of the way they built their team, and Dean Lombardi, the GM, still doubled down on
tripled down.
Yeah, on the way he built the team. So this should have been the wake up call, but I fear that it won't be. At least not for Team USA. Maybe for the rest of the world, but.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. I feel like every excuse that Dean Lombardi and John Tortorella made for their team in their respective press conferences, Team Europe could have made those same exact excuses. Our team was thrown together late. We didn't have time to establish chemistry, this and that. And yet, look at Team Europe flying to the World Cup final and, you know, giving Canada a scare with, you know, I mean, they did have talent on that team, but certainly not the most talented team in that tournament. So, to me, clearly the variable here is skill.
Yeah.
And a lack thereof will sink you very quickly. Team USA did not win a game.
They did not.
Did they even lead in a game?
They had the first goal against Canada.
Yes.
They led for like a minute and a half.
So I think the point here is that, look, GMs, don't overthink it. Skill is a good thing. That's the takeaway. Oh, and Anze Kopitar is really freaking good.
Really, really good.
Yeah. I enjoy watching him play.
Yeah. It's too bad he was the one that took that holding penalty. That does not change the fact that he is phenomenal.
He did so much for that team.
He really did.
And
I mean,
Jaro Halak also.
Yeah, it's like what we were talking about very early in the tournament, where Team Europe didn't really have their sea legs yet, and the only time that they did look good was when Kopitar was out there.
Yeah.
But then by the end of the tournament, you know, everyone really came together.
Yeah, and, you know, Marian Hossa, Matt Zuccarello, I thought looked good.
Thomas Tatar. Roman Josi looked fantastic.
I wonder how much better they would have looked if Gabrick didn't have to go home. Because, you know, they weren't, you know, like fish out of water without him. And obviously he's not going to be the top scorer on that team. But when they lost him, they did look a little thin.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, one sort of what-if scenario for me is what if Frederik Andersen had been the starter? Because he was supposed to start for Team Europe.
Yeah.
And look, I know Halak played great, but are we sure that Andersen could have turned in that performance? Like, who knows? So
yeah.
Credit to Jaro Halak. I think he settled any potential goalie controversy in Long Island, or I guess Brooklyn now.
Yeah. I mean, because I noticed in that game that Thomas Greiss wasn't even the backup. It was Philipp Grubauer.
Yeah, so. Another German.
Yeah, so interesting times for the New York Islanders, but that might be another story.
Yeah, so I think that's it for the World Cup.
I think that's
guys,
it.
Guys, thank you for your great analysis. But here we are. The NHL season is a week away. Real games. Real games.
Real NHL hockey games.
Real
men's professional ice hockey, as Randy Hahn likes to say. Randy Hahn, the great voice of the San Jose Sharks.
I mean, I got excited for the first preseason game.
Yes.
That's a first.
And there are preseason games being played, which is cool, but again, like, it's not quite there yet. In the spirit of being 1 week away from the season, we figured, let's just do what everyone else is doing and do a preview right? It's preview season. We've actually done a few previews in the past on previous pods, but I think now there's been a lot of movement in the NHL, enough for us to at least recalibrate our predictions and expectations a little bit. So we're going to start with the Western Conference. And just so everybody knows, all the listeners, before the show, we assembled doing our pre-production meeting. And
with beer.
I told the guys, all right, I'm going to make a list of teams the way I think this Western Conference is going to play out. I'm going to put it up on a whiteboard, and we're going to see what you guys think. So the whiteboard is actually up in front of us in the middle of the table. Let's start with the bottom, guys. So these are my bottom two teams. The bad / not trying to be good tier, although there's actually four groups. We can call them a quadrant, whatever you want to call them. The Arizona Coyotes and the Vancouver Canucks.
Not going to be good.
So Vancouver, clearly not good.
Not good.
And
possibly getting worse.
Possibly, yes. So, look, Vancouver, I think they still think that they have a shot at the playoffs. Newsflash, you don't. They're trading away talent, bringing in guys like Eric Gudbranson. It's a mess in Vancouver right now, and I don't see it improving. And Ryan Miller, could take another step back this season.
I mean, he hasn't given us a reason to think that he's going to rebound.
And I feel bad for the Sedin twins because, as phenomenal of players as they are, at least Henrik, they have no supporting cast. And I know that all the hype is, Louis Eriksson, the Swedish trio. We'll see how that plays
great.
Out.
Great. They have one line.
They have no defense. I mean, I guess Chris Tanev is a good defenseman, but he's all alone back there. So we're not going to waste too much breath in the Vancouver Canucks. They're not good at all. The Arizona Coyotes, they're intriguing because I put them more in the category of not trying to be good. I think they're still in that rebuild mode, and they're very aware of that, unlike the Vancouver Canucks, who are sort of accidentally rebuilding.
The thing with Arizona, because Vancouver just doesn't have a whole lot going on, Arizona, you can at least see the sun shining a little bit, if you will.
There's a lot of talent in Arizona.
Domi, Duclair, Oliver Ekman-Larsson is still there and still somehow maybe underrated.
Yeah, and don't forget Dylan Strome, who they drafted in the first round a couple years ago. So,
and potentially Louis Domingue.
Louis Domingue, we'll see if he can follow up the season he had last year. And they traded for another guy from...
Pavel Datsyuk.
Your boy.
No, they traded for another young prospect from Florida this summer. His name is escaping me right now. But
we'll have to get our statisticians.
Our statisticians are going to be on it. But yeah, so they have a nice little stable of young talent. And I like what they did with their blue line. They added Alex Goligoski.
Yes.
I think that he's an undervalued defenseman. He's going to help them a ton. They have a great coach in Dave Tippett, one of the best coaches in the NHL, in my opinion. And I think they have a clear-cut direction with this team. They know they're rebuilding. John Chayka, the 26, probably now 27-year-old general manager, has an analytics-driven approach, but what they've done is they've elevated Dave Tippett to a director of hockey operations or president of hockey operations.
Mm-hmm.
So they sort of have the eye test and the analytics sort of point of views working in tandem.
Yeah.
So I feel like this team is going places. It's just not going to be this season.
Yeah. It's just going to take time. The young guys are still developing. They're still putting. I feel like they've got an idea now of what the core is going to be looking like.
Yeah.
So now it's just a matter of piecing guys around them.
Yeah. So I'm optimistic on Arizona, just not for the 2016-17 season.
Right. It gets better, Arizona.
It gets better. Yes. All right. So now this is going to be the meat, I think, of this preview.
Yeah.
I have my middle pack. This goes from more questionable at the bottom to less questionable at the top. Let's start with the more questionable teams.
That's lukewarm Felix right there.
What do you mean? Oh, come on.
Oh, man. It doesn't feel good.
It's a questionable spectrum. Let's put it that way. On the more questionable side, a.k.a. teams who I think have something going for them, but there are things to be concerned about which are going to hold them back. First and foremost, the Colorado Avalanche, who are on the bottom of the spectrum. Colorado made a big change this summer. Well, I guess Patrick Waugh made a big change this summer.
Yeah.
Resigned as the head coach. Jared Bednar takes over, who was a quality head coach in the AHL. What do you make of this Colorado Avalanche team?
I've always liked the offensive talent that they have. Duchesne, MacKinnon, who looked phenomenal at the World Cup of Hockey. Landeskog, Tyson Barrie. If they can get consistent goaltending and maybe clean up their defensive zone, looking at the guys in the top tier on the whiteboard, which I'm not going to spoil right now.
Don't
but
spoil it.
It's just going to be a tough road. I think they're going to be a much improved team. I really do, but it's just going to be a tough road for them.
And it all depends on the coaching, because we saw Patrick Waugh's first year, the impact he made, that Colorado vastly overperformed. And, so maybe, they've shown that they have the talent and that they can win games. So I think it really all comes down to the coaching, because Duchesne not training away Duchesne last season was, basically like adding a player because it woke him up. We'll see if he continues that. McKinnon, we'll see if he rides his World Cup play.
I think he will.
Yeah, I do too. So I think it all hinges on what the coach can get out of him.
Yeah, I think with Colorado, we just don't know what to make of Jared Bednar yet. Like, he's shown a lot of potential in the American Hockey League. It's just a matter of, can that translate to the National Hockey League? My bet is that it will, maybe not right away, but I think just by virtue of being not Patrick Waugh, I think that the atmosphere in that locker room is going to improve greatly, because I think there were players on that team who legitimately did not get along with the coach.
Mm.
One, Matt Duchesne.
People didn't get along with Patrick Waugh.
What? Oh, yeah, shocker. Mm. So I think Bender will just provide sort of a fresh start for everybody. And I think he's going to bring them closer to just sort of that average level of, shot attempt differential, which is something that they've been extremely bad at the last couple of years. But again, like, a lot of talent on this team, top-end talent, but the depth is where it sort of falls apart for me. Like, I like the top-end talent on their blue line, like Tyson Barrie. Even Eric Johnson isn't that bad. It's just...
After that,
it's just not that awe-inspiring. Yeah. So for me, Colorado, there is potential for this team, but the question marks of their depth, what Jared Bender's ultimately going to do, it just holds them back a little bit. So that's why I have them on this sort of bottom, questionable spectrum area.
Yeah, and then I'm just always concerned about how consistent Varlamov is going to be. But, not having a Hall of Fame goaltender looking over his shoulder will maybe help, maybe.
Or just not having, like 40 shot attempts to worry about a game. Like, maybe that'll help.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to bring, math and facts into it, then...
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Whatever, sure.
All right, so so moving up north, up the spectrum, and up geographically, we have the Calgary Flames. Joe's Calgary Flames. Joe, sell me on the Calgary Flames.
I mean, I'm hoping that they're going to sell Goodrow on the Calgary Flames, because...
Yeah.
Like, if they can't re-sign him, which we don't think is going to happen. Like we think that even if
he's coming back.
Yeah, even if he does sit out a few games, that it's only going to be a few games before he re-signs.
We are at the point now, officially, I saw this morning, we're at the point, finally, where there are articles with such headlines as, Goodrow would never dream of requesting a trade, or blah, blah, blah. We're at that point where it's like, okay.
Got to separate yourself from Jacob Trouba.
Yeah.
But just assuming that he remains a Calgary Flame, they have, very talented forwards up front. Their defense is very, very good.
It's great.
Yeah. it's, upper tier defense in the league. And then, they got a goalie in Brian Elliott.
Great move, I think.
Yes,
and
great move.
With the strength of the Pacific Division, I have Calgary finishing third in the Pacific. Yeah, I know that might not be a popular opinion shared, definitely not by my co-hosts. But I mean, they definitely have playoff potential, and they made the playoffs 2 seasons ago and took it to 7 games against Anaheim. But I think they definitely have the talent to get back there. And, it's the thing about unproven coaches.
You never know.
Yeah. So, you look at the roster and you're like, they have, they have all the pieces there, or at least most of the pieces. It's just, a big giant question mark over the person pulling the strings on those pieces.
And that's the thing. Glenn Gallutson, the new head coach of the Calgary Flames, again, unproven and a lot less, I guess, in his previous runs outside of the NHL, or at least in his assistant coaching positions. It's a lot tougher to make anything of him as opposed to Bender, who we know has had a lot of a winning pedigree in the AHL. So it's tough to say what kind of effect he's going to have. But again, it goes back to the whole notion that anything might be better at this point than Bob Hartley or Patrick Waugh in Colorado. So they're going to be better just by virtue of not having Bob Hartley behind the bench.
Right. And, you know, Glenn Gullitson, you know, he's been in the NHL. So he has a sense of, you know, what's going on, obviously. So it just doesn't really have a really long track record yet. But, you know, he's got a good team. He's got a good team to work with.
Yeah, and their forward group, there's a lot to like about their forward group. Johnny Gaudreau, obviously. Sean Monahan, we'll see if he can continue to produce at the level he has. Hunter Shinkaruk is, you know, I guess not really a prospect anymore. He's a guy that could potentially break out this season. They were able to snag him from the Vancouver Canucks for Marcus Granlund, who I don't think is going to be a very good player in the NHL.
Yeah.
So Shinkaruk could be an X factor for them. Sam Bennett, obviously, probably going to take another step forward in his development. Michael Frolik remains a quality top six forward. And then, you know, to round out the lineup, Michael Backlund, I think a good sort of two-way center, a perfect fit for that third line.
Mm.
But then after that, I don't love their depth. You know, guys like Alex Chiasson, who, like, I think we can safely say is not a good NHL player. Mm. Lance Boma, I mean, Matt Stajan, like, is that guy, how old is that guy now, like 40?
He's, you know what, 32.
Okay, so close to 40.
Might as well be.
Yeah, but their defense, again, it's just, I mean, Mark Giordano, TJ Brody, just, you know, a great pairing. Dougie Hamilton, I think, has more to give to this team.
He does.
I think, and with a better coach, I think that might play to his strengths a little bit more.
And he improved in the second half of last season.
Yeah.
So if he can get anywhere close to where he was in that last year with Boston,
yeah,
that would be a huge shot in the arm.
Yeah, what concerns me with this team, obviously, is that bottom pairing with Derek Englund and Dennis Wiedemann. I mean, that's not a good pairing.
Wiedemann's making $5.2 million.
Buyout?
He's a UFA after this year.
So. Oh, okay, there you go.
So I think that the conclusion here, again, is this is a team with things to like, you know, to potentially things to really like. I love what they did in net with bringing in Brian Elliott. I think, again, just it's funny, like with Calgary, just by virtue of having a guy who's just average to potentially above average in net is going to help them so much because they have not had good goaltending in the last couple of years.
Like
Kari Ramo. Yoni Ordeo, who's like never going to be good.
They were just waiting for those two to turn into Mika Kiprusoff, and it just never happened, unfortunately, for them.
Jonas Hiller was just a placeholder, and he showed, you know, flashes of his Anaheim days.
Yeah, here and there.
Never sustained it.
Yeah, and Brian Elliott, like, there's question marks around him from people who haven't followed him as long about, like, oh, well, was he only good because of St. Louis? He was great in Ottawa, too.
Yeah, he was.
So I think he's going to, you know, like I said, at the very least, be average, and that's better than what they've gotten.
Yeah.
So
it's just going to be great that they don't have to play the goaltending carousel.
But the peak with this team isn't, the ceiling for this team isn't that high, and I think that's why I have them in sort of that questionable category.
Yeah.
Moving on up, and this pick might draw some ire from Joe a little bit. The Minnesota Wild, they made a number of moves this offseason. I think the most notable and the one that's going to change the, going to have the biggest effect on their outcome this season is bringing Bruce Brugeau behind the bench.
Yep.
I think that's...
Your boy.
I mean, he's one of the five best coaches in the NHL.
And has been for a while.
Has been for a while, and Mike Yeo was not good for the most part of his tenure in Minnesota. So, thoughts on the Wild. Get wild over the Wild.
I can't get wild over the Wild. I'm not into it. I'm not, like... So, like, Mikko Koivu is a good player. I don't think he's as good as everyone thought he was going to be.
Like, his top productive days are definitely well behind him.
Yeah. Zach Parise, still very good. Health is
always
a little bit of concern because of the way he plays and because he has not been entirely healthy the last few years. I like Charlie Coyle a lot as a power forward.
Mm-hmm.
But, we have the lineup in front of us, and I just, it's going to have to be by committee.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think they're all consistent enough. There's a lot of, like, aging stars on this team, like Pominville and Parise.
Yeah.
I think they're going to lack the firepower.
Well, what I like about this team is I feel like every line has at least a little spark to it. You know, obviously, say what you will about Parise, Stahl, and Coyle, but that's still, assuming that's going to be a line, that's still a line that can make you work on the defensive end.
Oh, yeah.
And then Granlund, Koivu, Zucker, or Zucker? Zucker, yeah.
I hear Zucker more than Zucker.
Well, either way, again, like, they don't really have a line where you can, quote-unquote, take a shift off, you know?
That's true, but I don't think they stack up against other teams.
And that's why I have them in this category, because there is talent up front, but there's, even compared to Calgary, like, Calgary isn't as deep, but I like Calgary's top-end talent more.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So, some question marks in that forward group, and then defensively, I think this is where they shine. Ryan Suter is still a solid defenseman. Jared Spurgeon might actually be their best defenseman.
Yeah, maybe.
Marco Scandella, I think, has potential. Jonas Brodin, I think he got a little overhyped a couple years ago, but he remains a quality defenseman. So, and then even Matthew Dumba, like, I think, I don't know, maybe that guy can reach another level. Who knows? So look, this team, there's nothing really that makes you, you're not blown away by the talent in this roster, but there aren't really too many holes, and that's what I like about it. And David Dubnyk has shown that he can be a very good goaltender.
Yeah, he can be a Vezina-type goaltender.
Yeah, and then you factor in a very good coach, and I think there is an upward trajectory for this team.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's just that with the way they're put together, I think you don't have to search too far to understand why they sometimes have long losing streaks.
Yeah, they're going to have to play a really good team game,
yeah,
and they're going to need good goaltending, but I think they're capable of that, and that's why I like this team more than like a Calgary or a Colorado.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, let's move ahead, because
it starts to get juicy.
It starts to get dicey. The Edmonton Oilers, I think this might be where it starts to get a little questionable, because you could make a case for Minnesota, that Minnesota is less questionable than Edmonton, but Edmonton does have one Connor McDavid. And I think that matters more than anything Minnesota can do.
Yeah.
I'll just ask it straight up. Do the Edmonton Oilers have a shot at the playoffs? Do they make the playoffs?
They have a shot.
I think they have a very good shot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's...
I think they're going to cause trouble deep in the year. Like, they're going to be relevant.
They are.
For much longer than they have been. But I don't think they're going to get in.
So what you're saying is they're not going to be in the mix for the number one pick?
They will
not. No. Who knows, though? Who knows?
Who knows
with this team?
I'm so glad that, like, knock on wood, but I'm so glad that those days are behind us, hopefully.
It's fun to see that team do well.
Yeah.
Like, the history of the Gretzky era. You know, it's nice to see, a storied Canadian franchise do well. I think this team has a high ceiling.
Yes.
But there's also potential for disaster.
Mm.
Just because I'm so not sold on their blue line, and I'm not even really that sold on their goaltender.
No.
Cam Talbot had one good season.
He had a good half season.
Good half season with the New York Rangers. And I've said it on previous podcasts, I think that the goaltender is the least of their worries, but they still need him to be good.
Yeah.
Todd McClellan, I think, had a positive effect on their team play last year. We'll see if that can increase this year. But they're not such a great systems team yet that they can just be at that level, like, you know, like a St. Louis, where the goaltender isn't all that important.
Yeah. I mean, getting to Tom McClellan, based on the beginning of last season and then the World Cup, he seems to be very good for Connor McDavid, because McDavid, you know, I think through 6 or 7 games, he may have only had like 1 point, and, you know, questions were starting to arise, and McClellan pulled him into his office and, you know, said just, you know, a couple things to him, and then McDavid just started scoring from there. Then, you know, in the World Cup, you know, everyone was beating around the bush of McDavid being named captain.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously there are other, even though they're still young, more experienced players there. But I mean, it's going to McDavid.
Look, I think that the biggest thing, my biggest thing that I love about Todd McClellan is I think he's not afraid to let his players play.
Mm-hmm.
He made that very clear in the World Cup, and I'm getting the sense that that might carry over into the NHL season a little bit. I think he's seen what a team can accomplish when it's just sort of let loose. And now the Edmonton Oilers are nowhere near as talented as Team North America was, but I think he's, I mean, look at the guys he has up front. I mean, Nugent Hopkins, Eberle, even Yakupov, McDavid, these are guys I feel like if you just let them play, they can do some serious damage.
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't want to take the skill away from them. You want to let them be creative and play to their strengths. And so it's going to be a little bit of a balancing act because everyone has to play defense and, yeah.
Defense?
Yeah, that thing that they kind of don't have right now. But just to your point, I think it would be a mistake to try and reel them all in and do what so many coaches tried to do to Alex Ovechkin.
Yes.
Which is like confine him. And, you know, so I think Todd McClellan, he clearly knows that skill is their strength, and I think he's going to do a good job of accentuating that.
I'm going to finally say it.
Say it. I wish you would.
I'm going to finally say it. I love their forward group.
I do. I do. I'm with you.
Like, it has come such a long way, and they have hobbled to this point. They have tripped and stumbled and rolled to this point, having to trade Taylor Hall to get here. But I think what they have now is a very good forward group.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see that. I think Benoit Poulin, like, that's the thing is, everyone talks about Connor McDavid, Jordan Eberle, even Draisaitl, but I think the two guys that really, to me, make me think that they have another gear in them, Benoit Poulin, I think, is underrated. I think he's actually a quality top six winger. And even Patrick Maroon, I think he has, and like, I think people don't realize how skilled this guy actually is. And then Milan Lucic is also a very good winger. So you look at those top three left wingers, Lucic, Pulia, and Maroon. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a team in the league that has more depth at that side of the ice, left wing.
Yeah, and there's not, it's like what you were talking about with Minnesota, there's not really a shift that you can take off against this team.
Yeah, especially with Lucic.
Yeah, oh man, especially. and your point about Patrick Maroon, like, he's, I think we all, when we think of Patrick Maroon, we think of him missing wide open nets, but like, he's got hands.
And
like,
I feel like now serious. He's, I feel like now he's in a good role too.
Yeah.
A third line sort of scoring winger. I think he can definitely fulfill that. Maybe in Anaheim, he just wasn't cut out to be a top line guy. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I think now this is a good role for him. And then on the right side, I think that's where it sort of, you know, falls apart a little bit. I love Jordan Eberle.
Great.
Definitely one of the best right wingers in the NHL. Yeah. But then you look at Nail Yakupov. I think he's good, but again, like, it's so tough to know what to expect from him. And then Jesse Puljujärvi, assuming he makes that lineup, we'll see what he can provide. But the right side is a bit more questionable. And then you have Zach Cassian, who, you know, if he doesn't drive himself into a stoplight, or reportedly the Uber driver, then he will start the season in Edmonton. And then down the middle with McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, I mean, what's not to love, you know?
There is nothing to not love.
But we could go on and on about how great their forwards are, but defense matters.
Defense matters.
Some say it wins championships.
It's been known to happen sometimes.
I'm just going to quickly run through.
Wow, okay.
Sorry, Zach Cassian's just all up in my head.
You just like, you like subtweeted out loud.
All right. all right. Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, Andre Sequeira, Mark Fain, Darnell Nurse, Brandon Davidson. I'm going to ask you this. How many teams have a better blue line than this team?
Like 28.
Like 20? Yes. They're not good. Adam Larson isn't that good. All right. That's where they're going to be hurting. Edmonton. I'm sorry to break it to you, but you're not going to make the playoffs because that blue line is still terrible.
You're going to be losing a lot of 6-5 games.
Yeah. It sucks because it's going to be a waste of the talent they've accumulated up front.
Yeah, we want to see those guys in the playoffs.
And look, I don't want to call it accumulated because that'd be giving Peter Chiarelli, their general manager, way too much credit. They've stumbled into this forward group.
I mean, have they stumbled into it when they've been like trying to get the first pick year after year? Stumbling would imply that it was not intentional.
I mean, they traded Taylor Hall.
That's true. Okay. All right. So, you win.
let's lay it all out on the line right now. Do the Oilers make the playoffs?
No.
Hat trick. All right. Moving up in the questionability spectrum, we have the Anaheim Ducks.
Your Anaheim Ducks.
A team that I cover for the Hockey Writers. Thoughts on the Ducks? Your San Jose Sharks, they're feared rivals. I guess maybe not so feared this season.
I mean, you can say that, but I'm kind of afraid of, like, every team. That's just how it goes.
You're the anxious fan.
I'm the anxious fan.
I'm not afraid of Randy Carlyle.
No, I'm not either, but...
Let's talk... Yeah.
We'll get to that, but, I mean, as long as they still have... I feel like I've said this a lot, but as long as they have Getzlaff and Perry and hopefully for them Lindholm, and you know, and the list goes on with the defense, they're going to be a threat. So they have taken a step back. Their depth is not what it was. They may not have some combination of Raquel and Lindholm, and that would suck for them. But I mean, they still have enough skill to get them into the playoffs.
Well, I want to hear Joe's anti-Ducks tirade first, and then we'll move on.
I mean, without Getzlaff and Perry at the World Cup during training camp, they were running like three third lines. You know, so yeah. They are very thin.
Yeah. So
Jenny Craig, man.
Look, the Ducks, they're a team that I follow very closely because I have to write about them and hopefully provide some intelligent thought about them, because there's actually not a lot of that going around that team.
And you can argue they made Mason Raymond was sort of like Mason Raymond was signed this.
Yes.
He was their only good offseason acquisition.
If you were to go with like a binary scale on signings, he's like their only thumbs up signing that I can think of off the top of my head. Look, the Ducks went the way that a lot of people predicted they would if they were to bow to the playoffs early again. They fired their coach, already a mistake because he's a great coach. They blew up their roster, like blew it up. They didn't bring anyone back. And obviously there's questions about did guys want to come back, what were the negotiations like, but they lost some quality forwards. They brought in forwards who I don't think anyone can argue are as good or better than the guys they lost. Antoine Vermette, a guy I'm referring to. Jared freaking Bohl.
Man. You just get saltier every time you say his name.
Jared Bohl.
You turn into a Boston fan.
And you know, like Mason Raymond's fine, but it's not like anything to get excited about.
Right.
If their team was already good and then they brought in Mason Raymond, they'd be like, oh, cool. Like, this could be really interesting. But they've made their forward group considerably worse. They were a team that already struggled to score goals last year. I don't see how that gets any better this year.
And the forward group that they signed, put them in a box for signing their defensemen, you know, which they're still struggling to do right now.
Exactly. And that is a great point, is that they... A lot of this supposedly was to make room for bringing back guys like Sami Vatanen, which they actually managed to do. I think at a 4.5, or it might have been 5.25.
4.875.
Oh, so I was right there.
And they had to. He's such a good shooting defenseman, puck-moving defenseman.
He's a great offensive defenseman, but they've put themselves in a bind by bringing in a guy like Jonathan Bernier, who... Like, might not... He's, like, the definition of average to below average as a goaltender.
Yeah. He's making $4 million.
Well, that's his cap hit. Like, the big counterpoint you'll hear from Ducks fans is, oh, well, they only retain half his salary. That doesn't matter if you have the salary cap. Like, they have the full cap hit. So now they're in a bind where they have to re-sign Rickard Rakell, who is a promising, you know, playmaking center, and Hampus Lindholm, who I think is one of the best defensemen in the league. They don't have a ton of room. They have $7.52 million in cap space. And they have, and one guy is asking for above six, Lindholm, and one guy wants between 3 and 4. Yeah. Like, you do the math, it just doesn't really work out.
Anaheim did it to themselves, he said, grinning.
And that's the thing, they didn't have, it didn't have to be this way for the Ducks.
Right. No.
All that being said, assuming everybody comes back, which I think they will come back. I think even though it's not looking great, it sounds like they're going to get Rakell for below market value. It sounds like they're going to get him for less than four.
That's a magic trick. I don't... How? That would be incredible.
Well, it's because he's only had a 120 goal season.
Yeah,
and and then with Lindholm, I think that he's going to come back. I think he's probably... He might sit out a couple games. Who knows? But I think they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think.
And, you know, with him in the fold... Him and Vatanen, like
he doesn't have much leverage. That's the thing with these RFAs.
Yeah, that's true. But like that defense is just so stacked.
So that's when the he's thing. If you look at the 2016-17 Anaheim Ducks, I think their forward group leaves a lot to be desired. But on the top end, which is I think something that really matters, Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry.
Their power play can look pretty good.
Yeah, and especially and it was the best in the league last year, if not one of the like two or three best. So, right. Ryan Getzlaff and Corey Perry. I mean, just those two together are always going to give you something, at least for the next 2-3 years.
Absolutely.
And Getzlaff faded a little last season, but I think he remains. I mean, you saw him in the World Cup; like he's still a very good player.
Yeah, drop past Getzlaff.
That's still a thing, but aside from that,
he makes up for it.
Yeah, he does.
Their depth up front is deplorable. Look, I guess we have to address Ryan Kesler real quick.
Do it.
He's a really good third line center at this point in his career.
Yeah.
And his goal totals are mostly a product of the ice time he receives and not like his efficiency or his like ability.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when he's on the ice, like on the power play, he, you know, his office is in front of the net. And, you know, you're going to pick up tips and rebounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, so his numbers are a little inflated for his overall production value.
Because he gets a lot of time. And so, like, I like Ryan Kesler. I still think he's a good player. But for the amount of money he makes, close to $7 million, it's just not a good contract. And it's going to become a toxic one, like, in a couple years. You know, Jakob Silfverberg, Andrew Cogliano.
You're like, the best thing that could happen for Anaheim this year.
What?
Is that
not making the playoffs?
No.
Bottoming out. Oh, yeah.
Kesler scores like 30 goals, and then
not impossible, by the way.
Yeah, no, and
not
then,
impossible.
And then Vegas wants him after that.
Oh my god,
that's the best.
But
possible
they would
thing.
Protect him though.
They shouldn't,
but they would because
so you're just saying they're just going to keep fucking up.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe.
I mean, Bob Murray like is pretty good at what you just described.
Yeah, so okay. so eloquently.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe I shouldn't have been so surprised.
Look, I think this team, for all the damage they did to themselves this summer, their blue line is still very, very good.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be understated.
And another year of John Gibson.
And John Gibson, he's going to be so important for them. But because of the coaching change, I think that's where it really sort of changes the narrative. They're going to take a step back in the standings.
Yes.
I think they're less questionable than the teams we just described, you know, the Edmontons, Minnesotas, Calgarys, because of their top-end talent and their quality blue line.
But I mean, they're going to be fending off Edmonton and Calgary for a lot of the season.
But I think they're going to be able to, for the most part.
We'll see.
We'll see. We'll see. That's what I think. I'm not, like, obviously it could go the other way. But what I think what really is going to decide it is, I think at this point we should know what we're going to get from Randy Carlyle. But because of everything he's been saying in the offseason about having sort of modified his approach, and I do think that they have quality assistant coaches in Paul McClain and Trent Yanni, maybe Randy Carlyle's effect, the Randy effect, will be muddled a little bit.
Mm.
Who knows? So that could matter.
Yeah, we're going to find out his ability to adapt.
But I think if we were to all sort of put our money on the line for this team, it would be like, making the playoffs, but not really going that far.
Yes, accurate.
Okay. Let's move on.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Sorry that took so long, but, you know, the Ducks are a team that I tend to pay attention to.
And they give us a lot of fodder.
The Winnipeg Jets, I have them as the least questionable in this questionable pack. Now, obviously, as everyone who listens to the show probably knows, I'm beating the drum of the Winnipeg Jets this season. And they're slowly giving me reasons to stop beating. Andrei Pavlik figures to be the starter again.
Oh no!
Oh no! Like really?
Yeah.
Oh no!
Well, he's because Hellebuyck is going to be in the minors.
Why? Why?
Well, okay. So look.
Go ahead.
I think with Winnipeg, the Pavlik factor, who. For everyone who doesn't know, Andrei Pavlik, their starting goaltender who has been for the past few seasons, is not good.
Right.
He's not even average, but they continue to play him even though they have guys who are at least, if not a little better, to considerably better in Michael Hutchinson and Connor Hellebuyck.
At least more consistent.
More consistent, yeah. So they've been kind of shooting themselves in the foot with holding on to Andrei Pavlik. But that might not matter all that much this season because their forward group looks really good.
Yeah.
Mark Scheifele, I think, Ooh. Is a stud.
Yeah, yes, he is.
He's going to put up career numbers this year.
And then, you know, Patrick Laine, Blake Wheeler, Matthew Perreault.
Brian Little.
Like, they're just stacked up front. And then on the blue line, you know, Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba.
If
he stays, although I think he's going to stay. He's requested a trade, but he doesn't have much leverage.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. And
they have no reason to trade him. Yeah. That's the thing.
And so, like, what would he sit out, or like, would he still?
Play? He would just sit out.
It's just
he's losing money.
Yeah, it's a bad move.
And then Tobias Enstrom, I think they have a great blue line. It's just a net. And Paul Maurice, I think, is a quality head coach. For the most part, Kevin Chabaldayoff seems to know what he's doing. So, look, this team, you can only really hold one thing against them, and that's their goaltender. Oh, and don't forget Nikolai Ehlers.
Right, yeah.
Remember that name, because he might take another huge step forward this season.
Yeah.
A lot of analytics are suggesting this summer that he could be having a breakout season this year.
Yeah, we saw flashes of it last season, so.
Yeah, and then Patrick Laine, of course, the second overall pick in this past draft. I mean, that's insane that, like, a really good team, or at least a foundationally solid team, got, like, a top pick.
Yeah.
Like, that's so rare. So it's going to be really exciting to see how that sort of manifests itself. So does Winnipeg make the playoffs? I guess that's contingent on what we're about to discuss. I think they have a real shot.
Yeah, no, they really do.
I think they do.
They have more than a legitimate chance.
It would be a disappointment if they didn't make it.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Like, you know, if the teams we just described didn't make it, I don't think any one of us here would be totally surprised.
Yeah.
But for Winnipeg, it'd be like, okay, guys, like, what's going on?
Yeah. And it's not a commentary on them. It's just that the West is stacked.
All right. So now that we finally made it out of the questionable spectrum. Our Periscope just died.
Oh, no.
It's okay.
How will they ever know who our top six is?
We made it to the thumbs up, but tier, or I guess quadrant, whatever you want to call it.
Meh.
That's for those of you listening at home, which is everyone. That's with three H's.
Yes, on the whiteboard, the big board.
On the big board.
So this is, to me, the group just outside of that surefire contender group. In this group, to start it off, we have the Los Angeles Kings, who remain a very, again, solid team, but there are starting to be a few question marks. I think the way they went out last season, especially after having not made the playoffs the season before, we're not sure which Jonathan Quick is going to show up. They're aging up front. Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin remain a potentially the best pairing in the NHL.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter is still a great coach. So there's not a lot to dislike about this team, but there's just enough to leave them out of that top group.
Yeah. Drew Doughty, Tyler Toffoli. Tyler Toffoli is actually fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, he's legitimately good. They have good pieces, and they've been playing that structure that Daryl Sutter implements, where they're just very stingy in the neutral zone. But I think it's just another case of they don't have as much firepower.
They really don't. And I just worry that, like, that the whole aging thing is going to catch up to them.
Gabrick, Carter.
Yeah. But again, as long as they have Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, I just feel like they're going to remain competitive.
I mean, a player that would help them a lot if he could really take the next step in his development is Tanner Pearson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he could be more than just a roster filler.
Right.
Like,
he's already pretty good.
No, yeah, he is, but he's
been inconsistent.
Yeah, he hasn't shown that he's a reliable top six forward, even though he is typically in the top six, right? But he doesn't put up, you know, the numbers that he has sort of shown that he could.
Yeah, and then you got Alec Martinez, who's, you know, pretty good at back on the blue line.
Yeah.
They added Tom Gilbert, who I think his last season in Montreal last year, he did not look good.
Right.
But I think
you liked him overall, didn't you?
They took a flyer on him, and I think he's for what they got him for, and sort of the role he's going to be looking to fill. I think he's going to be okay, like a just sort of a veteran puck moving defenseman.
Mm.
Like that's something they could definitely use on their team.
Yeah.
Look, the LA Kings are going to still be very good.
They are.
I think they're going to feast for the most part. And that's the thing is the LA Kings, and I hate to use this cliche, but they have an identity. They have a system. They know what it takes at this point, like what makes them successful, and they can also adapt to that.
They are, again, not to harp on this, but they are what Team USA was trying to be.
Yeah.
Except they actually do it the right way.
But they're like a finished product, whereas a lot of the teams in the Pacific Division are still trying to figure out sort of where they're at, and I feel like they're just going to eat those teams up for the most part.
Yeah.
They're just going to like kind of choke them to death.
I agree. And then new leadership, technically new.
Andre Kopitar taking the C from...
From Dustin Brown.
From Dustin Brown, who was salty about it.
Really?
Yeah. Publicly stated that he was not happy about the captaincy change.
Yeah.
A little
tough, play better.
I mean, he's not good.
No.
At this point, he might not have ever been good. Anyway,
he had a couple very good seasons. Like,
yeah, he
earned the captaincy, but the impact that he has on the team just is not strong enough to warrant leaving the C on his jersey.
I just think it's too early in like sort of the aging process of this team to start saying, oh, they're on the decline.
Yeah.
Because I think it'd be really easy to just say, oh, well, you know, they struggled last year, they struggled before.
And they're a team
write them off now. I don't think we're at that point yet.
They're a team that can use a retooling.
Yeah. Yeah, because they still have the talent. Like, that is not in question. They still have the coaching.
They just need to replace some of the depth they've lost in the past couple of years.
Yeah, even, what's his name? Mr. Game 7.
Oh, Williams. Justin Williams,
yeah. Like, he's sort of a secondary scorer like that. But I do think that the progression of Tyler Toffoli will really like carry them forward.
Yeah.
They might already have what you're describing. All right. Yeah. So I think we all feel pretty good about the LA Kings making the playoffs. Winning a round might be a tougher ask, but I think they're still in that mix.
I'm not going to say feel good about them making the playoffs. I'm going to say I feel confident about them.
I feel very confident they're going to make the playoffs.
Because I do not feel good when LA is in the playoffs. Good is the wrong word.
As a Sharks fan.
Sharks fan, not good.
Now, let's move up the list to a hotly debated team, at least in this circle, the Chicago Blackhawks.
Strong opinion alert.
Strong opinion alert. How do you guys feel about the Blackhawks and sort of the outlook that they have for the 16-17 season?
I texted you, Felix, the other day.
You texted me.
And I told you.
I have friends?
You have friends. Yeah, go check your Facebook, dude. You have like thousands of friends. I texted you the other day and I said, Chicago's making the playoffs. And then you didn't respond. That kind of hurt my feelings.
Oh, man. Maybe there's a reason I don't have friends.
Oh, man. Well, we're getting into the deeper issues. Welcome to the Garage Psychology podcast. So, Chicago, I feel very confident in saying they will make the playoffs. Even if Patrick Kane and Corey Crawford don't play out of their minds on the same level that they did last year, and even though the players that they've put around the core are probably not as good as what they've had in the past, that core group of talent is still more than enough to get them in, and like not too uncomfortably either.
Yeah.
Like Panarin, Kane, Taves, Anisimov.
Yeah.
Keith Seabrook, Chalmerson.
You're forgetting one.
Huhosa.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So
don't disrespect the Godfather.
Sorry. Sorry about it. Say what you will about the depth players, they still have way too much talent to miss out on the playoffs.
Yeah. Like if the argument against Anaheim is that, or for Anaheim is that, oh, they still have enough talent to make it. Well, then Chicago still has more than enough talent to make it.
Yeah.
The only difference is they play in a much harder division. Look, I think I sort of agree with you on Chicago. I'm backing off a little bit on the whole they're not making the playoffs thing, because at their worst, they're still a good like playoff team.
Yeah. Because if you look at the teams that are in the questionable bracket, which team is going to bump them out? Winnipeg, maybe?
Winnipeg's a maybe, but with the Pavlik factor just really bugs me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you know, and then after that, there's no way. Like, no one else is bumping them out. Like, no, sorry to everyone in Anaheim, Edmonton, Minnesota, Calgary, Colorado, but you're not bumping out Chicago of the playoffs. Like, Chicago is such a well-established team at this point.
Like, you're bumping out LA first, before, like, if you're in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Before you're bumping out Chicago.
Yeah, and so, and that's a great point. And then, but I think the biggest move they made this offseason was bringing in Brian Campbell, who has quietly been an excellent blue liner for the Florida Panthers the last few years, and could lead maybe one last charge for this sort of Chicago core, because they've leaned so heavily on Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook and even Nicholas Jalmerson the last couple of years. I think bringing in a guy like Brian Campbell, who is still very good, and sort of gives them that spark offensively from the back end, that's going to make a world of a difference for their blue line.
Yeah, catching just a few minutes of the Blues versus Blackhawks preseason game, I think it was yesterday, Brian Campbell can still skate.
Yeah.
Like, not breaking news there, but he can still... And
he's very efficient, too.
Yeah, very efficient, and just by virtue of him being able to skate so well, and it's going to mean he can get a good amount of playing time, and just having those extra minutes taken away from guys like Keith and Seabrook is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, and it's going to help the overall team play, too, like the transition play through the neutral zone. Like, they're not... And I don't really have, like, any numbers to back this up, but it's going to be nice having a guy to be able to transport the puck through the neutral zone and into the offensive zone who's not like Patrick Kane or Artemi Panarin or Artem Anisimov. So they're really going to benefit from that. I think his presence just at face value is going to help, but I think the sort of like, whatever you want to call it, like the offshoot of his presence is really going to help too. So
And then Corey Crawford.
Corey Crawford's still a solid goaltender.
Still back there.
Yeah, still back.
he's still back there wearing his black pads that I'm not a fan of, but whatever.
Yeah, so I think Chicago, it's still a very good team, but it's just hard to really say solidly, like, oh yeah, they're legit, like, one of the three best teams in this conference.
Yeah.
All right, let's move a little further up the ladder.
Let's do it.
And maybe after all this Chicago talk, maybe now I might back off putting this team above them. The Dallas Stars. Look, the Dallas Stars didn't do a ton this offseason to change the makeup of the roster, notably in net, which is a place that they've struggled quite a bit in the last couple of years with the tandem of Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen. But the firepower they have up front, I think, is just, it's going to carry them once again to a very good season.
And, you know, the way Dallas plays, you know, I don't know if Lindy Ruff has changed his philosophy going into this season, but
it sounds like he has not.
Yeah, if anything, he should be doubling down after losing all that defense. We're going to outscore you. Like, we're going to give up 1,000 goals, but we're going to score 1,001 goals.
Yeah, and don't underrate the addition of Yuri Hudler to that team. I think that he is sort of a guy who got a little overlooked in the free agency market. I think he's really going to help that top six. And Jason Spezza is turning into one of the more underrated centers in the NHL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think his impact on that team, like, really can't, you know, it has to be discussed, because he really, I mean, without him, they're sort of, they don't really have nearly as much depth down the middle. So I just love the talent they have up front. I would take it over, like, 90% of teams in the NHL.
I would too. And I mean, even the talent on the back end, too, which...
Yeah, and that's where it gets interesting, because they lost Jason Demers and Alex Goligoski.
They did.
And that's a lot of puck moving to lose in one summer. So it's going to be interesting how they sort of allocate the puck moving breakout responsibilities amongst their defensemen.
Yeah, it'll be, obviously, Klingberg, and then I think Johnny Oduya's role is probably going to get ramped up a little bit.
Is Jordy Benn the third defenseman?
Because
that's not good.
Yeah. Well, they brought in Dan Hamhuis, who I think is, at this point in his career, still like very serviceable and like somewhat underrated.
Mm.
So I think we're still going to see a very good Dallas Stars team, and this might be the off year where like Antti Niemi actually plays pretty well, or Kyrie, you know, like there's always that one year.
But I mean, last year, like they got a lot of their points in the first couple months of the season when both of those guys were playing well. And then after that, neither of them played well. Like, an equivalent in another league is the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah, they
San Francisco Giants of baseball.
Yeah, the San Francisco baseball Giants. they were, until the All-Star game, you know, they had best record in the majors. And then, you know, their bullpen finally, you know, they
spiraled out of control.
They sputtered and finally fizzled out. And, you know, then
That's what happened to the Stars.
They had one of the worst records in the majors from the All-Star break. And, you know, last season, you know, they were riding Niemi and Letton in the first couple of months, and they got them a lot of points, and then they couldn't find one to even take the reins for a period.
Yeah, especially in the playoffs. Yeah. And that's why I put this team in the, obviously, thumbs up. I like this team a lot, but I can't really feel that great about them because of those limitations.
Yeah. We can all see what's coming. Like, it's going to be very similar to last season,
where
they are dominant offensively, and that's going to be more than enough to carry them into the playoffs and probably win a round, maybe even two, but I just don't see the goaltending holding up.
Yeah, but again, they're very well coached with Lindy Ruff.
Yeah.
They're top-end talent. I think they have enough spark on their, you know, defensively. So they're still going to be a very good team.
They are.
Who knows? Like, there's goaltending is so hard to predict. This might be the off year where, like, one of those guys takes the hold of that starting job.
Like a few years ago when Kari Lehtinen had, like, a 919 save percentage.
Yeah, so who knows?
And then I overvalued him in fantasy, and, like, I'm not bitter about it or anything, but, like, guys, why'd you bring this up? Why? Stop asking questions.
Your fantasy team, Lehtinen the goals.
They don't need much from Lehtinen. Like, they just need him to be, like, a little above average to, like, really dominate the league. All right, now, guys, we made it. The just all caps good.
Good.
There are three teams in this conference who are legit good.
Good.
Starting with the Nashville Predators.
Yes.
Made, I think, the trade of the summer, maybe of the last decade.
Here it comes. Weber warning.
Oh, that's 15 episodes in a row of Shea Weber.
We got close.
We got the air horn going.
Oh, there's confetti and balloons.
Yes,
wow.
We made it. The Nashville Predators dumped Shea Weber to the Montreal Canadiens for PK Subban, one of the very best players in this league. That was a monumental move by them, and I think we might already be underrating how much better they're going to be with Subban.
Yeah,
because their blue line was already damn good.
Yeah, that power play is going to be scary. Like, they've got, Subban, Josi, Forsberg, Neal, Peter Laviolette. I think is the perfect coach for this kind of really offensively talented roster. Ryan Johansson.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop.
Yeah. I love what they've been able to assemble defensively. You know, Subban, Josi. I think what's really remarkable about this team is that either Josi or Subban could be the best defenseman on a lot of teams.
Yeah.
And to have two of those guys, stallions, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
And then, but looking further down the lineup, guys like Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, and then on the third pairing, I think just today, Barrett Jackman retired.
He did.
So, you know, shout out to Barrett for an illustrious career.
I'm sure Owen Nolan cracked a beer for that. They did not like each other.
But Yannick Weber, I think, is a solid depth defenseman. They got Matt Irwin back there, too, as the 7th or 8th defenseman. So, like, look, there's a lot to like back there. And I think it's pretty easy to say that this is the best blue line in the NHL.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, the only real big question mark is a goaltender that's been phenomenal for a long time, but last year was not good for Pekka Rinne.
Pekka Rinne is really where sort of the questions start to arise for this team. We don't know what to expect from him. And honestly, at this point, I shouldn't even be saying we don't know. I think we know what we're going to get from him. We're going to get flashes of, like, decent, but mostly average to below average for most of the season.
Honestly, his career is sort of going the way Nabokov's career went. You know, like, in the beginning of his career, when, the NHL was at when he came into the league, he was brilliant. And then as the game started to pass him by, it highlighted all the holes in his game.
Well, Pekka Rinne's also suffered some injuries, I think, that maybe are having some, like, residual effects in his game. So that could be an issue. But I think, really, with the addition of Subban and sort of the maturation of their, you know, their forwards, Ryan Johansson, I think, is going to take another step forward. Even guy like that we talked about earlier this summer, Kalle Järnkrok, could be sort of an X factor for them. So I don't love their forward group, but their blue line is just so freaking good that it just sort of everything else is a little irrelevant to me.
Yeah, because the thing that I've been saying is that for as good as Mike Ribeiro has been in his career,
at playing hockey, yeah,
he was a healthy scratch at times in the second round,
yeah,
and was largely invisible. So you, Ryan Johansson, bonafide number one center, and then you have the new captain Mike Fisher as the second line center,
Mike Underwood,
Captain Country. you know, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
But I think when your second and third line centers are Fisher and Ribeiro, and
it's not great.
Yeah, it's not great. And, you know, like I said, Ribeiro was a healthy scratch.
Would have been great in 2007.
Yeah.
Now is not so great.
Yeah.
And that's why I have them third in this top tier. But yeah, a lot to love about Nashville. And I guess the beauty of their blue line now is that they could trade, you know, like a Matisse, maybe not a Matisse Ekholm, but a guy like, not Yannick Weber, but what's his name? Ryan Ellis. Ryan Ellis. They can maybe part ways with a guy like that to bring in another winger or a center.
Yeah.
You know, like they have a little bit of leverage now to sort of make a move.
And there are always teams that are looking for defense going to the playoffs.
They could get a lot for Ryan Ellis. I can't see them trading Ekholm, but yeah. I think they could legitimately trade him and be okay.
Mm.
But I think they should really give this a chance first, like,
yeah,
see what they have, because I really want, I mean, it's going to be a great sort of like sort of thought exercise for us, because it's like, let's see if having a really great blue line can sort of outweigh shortcomings in the other two sort of pillars of a team, you know? So we'll see. I'm really intrigued by this team. It's going to be a lot of fun. And like you said earlier, I think that Peter Laviolette is sort of the perfect coach for this team, because he's only going to accentuate what they're already good at, like naturally, which is speed, more speed.
Yeah, it's like
offense. What, you know,
it's like the fun things. It's like what we said about Todd McClellan. He knows that his team has a lot of skill, and that's what he's going to accentuate.
Yeah. So a lot of love for Nashville. And look, I hope they do well. I think it'd be a cool story, especially for, like, yeah, I mean, they're playing freaking Tennessee.
Yeah.
So,
which
that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that place looked like fun to be at during the All-Star game.
I've been there, by the way. It is fun.
I've heard nothing but good things.
That them setting the hockey world on fire with Subban in his first year, that'll be a big storyline in and of itself.
Yeah. Oh yeah, especially when Subban returns to Montreal.
Ooh.
Oh god.
Can't wait.
Not looking forward to
Cannot
it.
Wait.
All right, now moving up the list, the St. Louis Blues. The Blues of St. Louis.
Yes.
A team that I think, I guess you could say, like, took a step back to take, like, two forward.
The cliche I was going to invoke is, you know, they shed a little bulk.
They did. I think losing David Backes is going to do them a lot of good, because I think he was almost a hindrance to their play as the season wore on. Still not a bad player or anything, but I think he just sort of wasn't in the right role anymore. Now you're getting guys like Yuri Laterra, really going to get more playing time, more accentuated. Jaden Schwartz, and then obviously Vladimir Tarasenko, who remains, you know, one of the five best shooters in the NHL. Maybe the three best.
He might be the best shooter. Like, he might have the best wrist shot in the league.
Just like the best pure shot, I think, might be Tarasenko. And then Robbie Fabry, a guy that Nick likes a lot.
I do.
And then David Perron returned to St. Louis, which I think is going to matter for them, because just getting a chance to watch him closely in Anaheim last year, I loved what I saw from him, and just sort of his ability to adapt to line mates and really sort of add his own brand of hockey. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what he can do in St. Louis, a city he's familiar with, a coach he's familiar with, and Kent Hinchcock. So I'm not blown away by their forward group, but I think it's just very solid.
It's very solid. And to your point about Perron, he's a guy that's a skilled guy that likes to slow the game down. And so I think he'll fit right in with Paul Stastny.
Yeah, and he's gritty too. He loves going to the net and sort of just wreaking havoc.
Yes. Once upon a time, a few years ago, he had 90 penalty minutes, all of them minors.
Oh my god, that's a lot of minors.
That's 45 minors.
Yeah.
Math, guys.
He had more than half a penalty a game.
Yeah.
And then there's the blue line for the St. Louis Blues, Jay Bomeister, who I think is solidly on the decline, but didn't look terrible for Team Canada.
I think saying didn't look terrible is kind of selling him short. Yeah. Like
he looked pretty good.
He looked good.
Yeah, he looked pretty good. He exceeded our expectations. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I won't say that he lit the world on fire, but he looked good.
Alex Pietrangelo is still a very good defenseman, but I think we're reaching that point in his career where he's become overrated.
Maybe. I mean, well, he had a couple of seasons where he put up really big numbers, especially assist totals.
And you got to be careful with defensemen when you're judging them through that lens, because it's not always the best, you know, indicator of their overall play.
Yeah, it depends on who's playing around him and who's bearing chances and who isn't. But you know, still very good. But I think when you say the name Alex Pietrangelo, you're still thinking about
the
guy from a couple years ago, rather than the guy that we've been seeing.
Yeah, who's still very good.
Who's still very good.
Yeah.
But just possibly a little overrated.
But the funny thing is, their best defenseman might actually be Colton Parayko.
Maybe.
Who last season really stood out as... He was a rookie, right?
Yes, I believe he was.
He's a rookie. He's got a ton of size, great skating ability, looked good for Team North America in the World Cup. And then, obviously, Kevin Shattenkirk.
Kevin Shattenkirk notable, might be their best defenseman. If you
notable
ask me.
Omission from Team USA.
Those last three names, Pietrangelo, Parayko, Shattenkirk, it's going to be interesting to see how their seasons unfold. Because you know, there was rumors last year that they were going to try and unload Shattenkirk at the very latest in the offseason, and that ended up not happening. But looking at you know their contracts... you see, Shattenkirk, he's a UFA after this year. This year he's making just over $4 million. And then Pietrangelo is locked up until 2020, and he's making 6.5, but his no trade clause kicks in after this year. And, you know, Shattenkirk and Pietrangelo are separated by a year in age. And Parayko looking like he's going to be they want him to take a more prominent role, you know, maybe more of the go-to guy on defense. So
is he still on his entry-level deal?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's making...
So this is kind of an interesting... I don't want to call it a make-or-break year for St. Louis, because that's kind of what it was last year.
And the year before. And the year before that.
but they're going to have to make some tough decisions this summer, and... You know, depending on where they are in the standings come the trade deadline, it could be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, they could potentially be sellers if things go south, which I don't think they will.
No.
It's hard to imagine.
But in a 41-game stretch...
That's why they're in our good all-caps bracket.
Yeah, but again, like in a 41-game stretch, weird things can happen. And so it wouldn't shock me if they just sort of said, you know, screw it. Like, we're going to regroup. But who knows? I think the smart thing to do with this team would be to really just go all in this year.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is such a great collection of talent. And in net, Jake Allen, they unloaded Brian Elliott. I think a move they had to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think Jake Allen is already very good. And there was no way they were going to keep both guys.
And those two are, you know, when they're at their best, they're sort of on par with each other, which is, you know, very good.
Yeah.
You know, their par is... You know, a few strokes better than par for almost the rest of the league.
Yeah, and it's nice to see that they're finally set in goal.
Yeah,
and so, the thing that he brings to the table is he's a very good puck mover from a goaltender standpoint. So I think that's going to help the team. That's going to help any team, but it's another. You guys can jump in whenever you want now.
It's another thing to like about this team.
Yes.
But yeah, I think overall the St. Louis Blues, it's hard to bet against them right now. I think once the season unfolds, we might see some issues up front. Although there's a lot to like up front, who knows? You know, things could go south. Maybe Ken Hitchcock, I don't want to use this cliche, loses the room. But maybe his message sort of wears off on this team. It's been a few years now.
You know, his message of, guys, it's my last year, it's been real.
Microb.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I think it's hard to, you know, nearly impossible to not have this team as one of the very best in the Western Conference. Yeah. So, moving on to our last team. If you didn't figure it out by now, for those listening, the San Jose Sharks. I think you guys are enjoying the placement of this team.
Feels good to have won the Garage Hockey Cup. Oh, yeah. Feels good, baby.
Yep. Well, look, let's talk about these Sharks, because I think amongst all the teams we've described, the Sharks have the least
resistance.
The least question marks. Nah. There really isn't anything about this team that makes you pause. The only thing, and look, and I think this speaks to the quality of this team that I'm already trying to think of what I could possibly not like about them. My only thing with them is the age factor. Because at some point, it's like they always say, Father Time is undefeated. Yeah. It could happen.
Yeah, for the, I mean, it's fair to say for the last 5 years, every year that has come and gone could have been the year that Thornton slowed down or Marlowe. And, you know, we've kind of seen that with Marlowe a little bit.
I think Marlowe's there.
Yeah.
And the question marks that would be surrounding this team actually were from last year. Because
it was the same thing last year.
You know, and if you just, like, I don't think we're really going to see one of those question marks, Patrick Marlowe, become, you know, a first line forward again. I think he realizes that too, and he's settling into more of the third line center special teams role, and, you know, just being out there for speed and, you know, if, in a word, depth,
and still really good on the power play with the unit that's been together for, it feels like, forever.
And then, you know, the other question mark when we were talking about age, you know, I was like, Joe Thornton, you know, he's not exactly young anymore. You know, he's 37 now. But I mean, you know, Thornton was never, he never had the hardest shot. He has a good shot. And he was never the fastest. But, you know, Thornton's strength, his main strength lies between his ears.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, time doesn't really affect that.
Yeah, that's not going to erode.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at their forward group, I mean, you look at Pavelski, you know, Thornton, Hurdle,
Couture.
There's so much to like. I think Couture is a bit underrated around the league. You know, Timo Meier could potentially make an impression, although now he's hurt.
Sick.
Mononucleosis.
Oh, that's not good.
He's going to be out until, like, November.
Okay, well, that...
I'm so rattled.
That's fine, because, again, looking at the way that this division is shaking out for the Sharks...
It's not fine. It'll never be fine.
Okay, well... and I love what they have in their bottom six with Timo Meier... Well, he's not going to be there now. Oof. Joel Ward, I think, still has another... I mean, in the role he's expected to be in, he'll be great.
Yeah.
Matt Nieto, Tierney, Carlson, like... I don't know. I love that... I like that every guy on this roster can play.
Yeah.
Like, that is so underrated. And definitely a lesson that I think other teams should be taking note of around the league. Looking at you, Anaheim Ducks.
It took San Jose a long time to learn that lesson.
But like, everyone can make a play on this team, which I like.
Yeah. And, you know, they upgraded positions that needed to be upgraded. They needed, clearly, after playing Pittsburgh, they had to get faster. They got Michael Boedker.
Yeah, and that's, we should mention that. Yeah. He is the big fish that they got from the free agency pond this summer. It was Michael Boedker. They signed him to a $4.5 million deal for 2 years. But I think he's going to add a nice, like you were saying, a nice speed dimension. $4 million confirmed by our statistician.
4 years.
Yeah. 4 years. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
And
he, you know, it's funny. You could almost say that Boedker is sort of in the Patrick Marleau role now.
Yeah,
the speed down the wing.
Yeah,
the scoring.
Yeah,
I think there are question marks analytically around Boedker, just like what was the true nature of his numbers in Arizona, because a lot of people were arguing that a lot of it was the product of his usage, sort of just the fact that he got all the power play time, all the top line time. So we'll see if that translates to San Jose, but I think that he's going to get that time again. Like, he's going to have better line mates, so he's going to keep producing. I think that sort of worry might be a little overblown.
Yeah, he'll be on that second power play unit, and he makes it look a lot better, I think. And then, obviously, they addressed, I feel like, a need on the back end. They signed David Schlemko, who's low-key, really, really kind of skilled.
Yeah.
Like, he's good with the puck.
He's very good. And, you know, like, what's his name again? Their young defenseman?
Oh, Dylan DeMello.
Dylan DeMello. You know, but the other guy.
Julius Bergman?
No. Man.
That's a deep cut.
Mirko Mueller.
It says so much that Mirko Mueller is the third guy you came up with. If any of those guys, like Mueller, Bergman, probably not Bergman.
Probably not.
DeMello.
He's really young, Bergman.
He's really young. He's like 20. If any of those guys can take a step forward during training camp and potentially leave an impression on the coaching staff, that could be big for them, because I love what they have on their first two pairings. And I don't mind their third pairing, but that could really be interesting if they can add that sort of youthful puck-moving dimension
yeah.
on the third pairing.
Yeah, they have good problems now.
These are all good things to worry about. Yeah. It's not, oh man, both our goalies suck, or oh man, we have three third lines. It's like, oh, well, we're trying to figure out which good defenseman to put on our third pairing.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, it's nice that they've gotten away from the mentality of, oh, we need the Jody Shelleys of the world and the Scott Parkers of the world. Like you said, every line can play now, no disrespect to those guys, but I think San Jose is keeping up with the times.
And they're well coached.
Peter DeBoer.
Peter DeBoer is one of the best coaches in the league. Has been for quite some time. I think he got the most out of that team in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Took them to the Stanley Cup playoffs in 2012. I think they weren't that great of a team, honestly.
Yeah. It's fair to say that it was shocking that they made made the Stanley Cup final.
I think Todd McClellan, it was just time for him to go a couple years ago. There was so much weirdness going around the franchise. Like something had to move, and obviously the coach is the easiest guy to let go of. But they brought in an equal to McClellan, if not better. So again, if you try to rate teams through the lens of, well, question marks, I think San Jose has little to no question marks.
Speaking of a non question mark, one piece we forgot. Martin Jones.
Ah, yes.
Martin Jones,
baby. I'll let Nick take the wheel on this one.
All right, I'm going to grab the mic for this one.
Yo, what's up?
Yo. Martin Jones he looks like he came from like a factory on a planet where just fantastic goalies are made.
Yeah.
A planet called Finn? No.
He has a very good technique.
Yeah.
Very, very good sort of just mechanics to his game.
Good mechanics. Kind of gets some flack for not being that athletic, which is a fallacy because he's very athletic.
He makes it look easy.
He's just in such good position all the time.
He's an above average goaltender.
Yeah. I can rave for like the next like 37 minutes or whatever if you want me to, but I'm not going to.
There are no holes in this roster. It's just a matter of, to me at least, will the age factor come into play? Which it might. And even if it does, that's the thing. Even if Thornton slows down a bit, even if Marleau regresses further, even in Pavelski, it's starting to get up there too. I think he's like
33. Something like that.
So, eventually time catches up to these guys, and they have a lot of hockey in them at this point in their careers. So, that could start to matter. But even if that happens, I still like their chances of being a very good team.
Yeah, I do too.
Because Brent Burns,
I mean, all he does is grow facial hair and get pucks to the net.
Yeah. Like,
he's kind of a machine.
So, right now, today's October 3rd. I think we're like 9 days away from the regular season, something like that.
Yeah.
We proclaim the San Jose Sharks, on paper, are the best team in the Western Conference.
It sounds good.
Definitely on paper, yes.
On paper.
It sounds like music to my ears.
Well, guys, I guess this is our official preview. We've done it. We've ran through the Western Conference. Now, in a week from now, we'll finally start to see how it all plays out, and I'm excited.
Hold us to this. Everyone bookmark this podcast, and at the end of the season, or maybe we'll maybe do a progress report and see how we're doing.
Yeah.
Check in with ourselves and see how close we were.
Okay, I'll ask you this last question, and then I think we'll get out of here because you have to be at work early.
I do. This podcast will not go up tonight. This will go up Tuesday night.
Anyway, what's the team you feel like you could be the most wrong about?
The team I could be the most wrong about? Joe, you have a wry smile on your face.
Oh, no, easily. Like, there's a team that I'm sort of jumping on the bandwagon because I sort of feel good about them being a bit of a surprise in both conferences. But in the West, the team that I keep mentioning is Calgary. And I could easily be wrong about them.
Yeah. Yeah, you've set the bar high for them. Man, I don't know. I'm just, you know what? I will not be wrong. I will not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I will not.
By the way, I will not be wrong is a much higher bar than what I've set.
Okay. I think the team I could be the most wrong about is the Anaheim Ducks, because I feel like there's a lot of potential for disaster with this team. And I'm sort of taking the optimistic side, you know, of the ledger when I'm evaluating this team right now. But I feel like it could very easily sort of just implode.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
You know what? Just because I've been so against them, I'm going to say Minnesota. I think that's a fair pick. I have not been a big fan of theirs. Just looking at the roster that they have.
But they gave you Brent Burns.
They, you know, I love you forever for doing that, Minnesota.
Thank you for taking Seto.
Thank you. Yeah. But
like, now in the Kings.
Pro tryout.
Yeah.
He has not been cut, so, and apparently showed up in good shape, so big shout out. But Minnesota, like I said, I'm just kind of underwhelmed with them on paper, but it's not to say that they don't have something to work with, and with a really good, actually great new coach, I could be wrong. They could.
So you just totally backed off anything you were going to say negative about them?
No.
Well, no. He was saying
negative things.
Oh,
earlier.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
And
okay.
Now it's like, this is how it could be wrong.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So, I like I said, to quote the great Don Henley, I could be wrong, but I'm not. But
no lukewarm tonight.
So, they will miss the playoffs, but I could be wrong about it.
I think another team that I could potentially see being very wrong about is, where is it?
Where are they?
Where are
Who
they?
Who are you looking for?
The Dallas Stars, because as much as I like the talent they have up front and sort of, you know, their first pairing is nice on defense, I could see things going very wrong there too, because they don't have as much depth on the blue line. That goaltending might just be even worse this year, so I could see that sort of falling off a cliff, but I don't know.
Was Dallas the last team to have Chris Russell?
Yes.
So for a team that lacks defensive depth, why did they not bring him back?
Because he's not good.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
he's okay.
You look at the rest of the. They have kind of a top four thing going on, and so
another team I feel like I could be very wrong about is the Edmonton Oilers, because as much as I like what they have up front, we might almost be understating how bad they are defensively.
Yeah,
like that is going to be an issue, and we're also underestimating their potential for making another stupid trade. Like if things start going south, like they might do something really dumb at the trade deadline. So,
like if McDavid got injured again,
like because I think at some point we're going to see Jordan Eberle get traded, and I'm not confident at this point that they're going to get good return.
I feel like that'd be a horrible move after trading Taylor Hall.
The writing is on the wall. I think it's going to happen.
I would have thought that he would have been traded before Hall. So
we shall see. But that's our predictions and our sort of hedges, our caveats.
Yes.
But yeah.
That's us covering all of our bases.
Next episode, we're doing the Eastern Conference.
Yes.
So that's going to be fun. I'll say this about the East preemptively. The middle, less questionable to more questionable spectrum is a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Than the West.
Yeah. It will be large. We might need two whiteboards.
We might.
One just for the middle.
All right, boys.
We did
it.
Good pod. Guys, thank you for listening to another episode of the Garage Hockey Podcast. If you would like to hear more of us, you can I always have trouble saying the word subscribe.
Say it.
You can subscribe to us. Maybe I should just spell it out.
Like and describe.
Yeah, like and describe. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. As always, we appreciate a 5-star review because it will help us move up the charts. And we will, I'm so tired. What's happening to me?
You got us. You got this.
I got this.
We're going to egg you on.
If you rate and review the podcast, it'll move us up the charts. It'll make it easier for people to find us. And then we'll spread more hockey goodness in the podcast world. You can also follow us on Twitter at Garage Hockey Pod. Tweet us there if you want to leave questions. We always enjoy the listener questions. If you agree or disagree with any of our opinions, you can yell at us as much as you want in all caps. But aside from that, guys, we'll talk to you soon about the East. Thanks for listening.